So I think you know the theme of the talk, and it'll be something that continues some of what I brought up in January here at the Marin Sangha, when I was inspired by having just taught the one-week Metta retreat. And I was interested in this theme of how we might say wisdom can be connected with the heart, and how often it's not, how often there's a disconnection between the kind heart, the awakened heart, the heart of metta or compassion, and the quality of wisdom. And so I want to explore this, how this can be done. The Buddha himself seemingly connected the metta with wisdom. It's said that when the Buddha was just hanging out, he would be in a state of metta. When he was walking, he would be in metta. And the metta that he practiced was unlike the kind of metta that we generally practice at our retreat centers and that we've mostly been instructed on, which is the repetition of phrases. Rather, what the Buddha taught was pretty much the radiating metta that we did at the end of the meditation. So the Buddha would basically be in this state of vast awareness filled with kindness and compassion. And that would be his state. And yet, as I have explored, much of the way that we've received metta in the West somewhat disconnects loving kindness and other heart practices from wisdom and even from the whole process of awakening. I looked into this some in January, the way, for example, that the main way of teaching loving kindness in the West comes out of the Burmese tradition, which comes from the text called the Visuddhimagga, where loving kindness is classified as a mode of concentration, not as a way to develop insight or wisdom. And so we have a radical separation there, which is actually not the way it was in the teachings of the Buddha. But nonetheless, that's influenced us a lot, so that if we go to a retreat, we'll typically practice metta on the side. It's somewhat of an add-on, not particularly integrated with the other practices that we've been doing. You know, and one of the things I wanted to do with the guided meditation was to see what it would feel like to more intentionally have our core practices like concentration and mindfulness guided by the spirit of metta. Or again, it could be compassion, to have those interfused. And then in a parallel way, to have the practice of metta be more clearly connected with mindfulness and wisdom. Again, as I think it is in the teachings of the Buddha, which a lot of these teachings are not well known, the way that the Buddha actually saw the development of the heart practices, loving kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity, as an integral part of the development of awakening. In other words, they lead to insight. Again, which is not the way, not the framework that most of us have received in being taught metta. And I've been interested in this for a few other reasons as well, that it's very interesting to see the way that some of this can also be connected with our conditioning. And a lot of it, I think, can be around gender. You know, the way that wisdom can be disconnected from kindness and compassion. Not necessarily, but at times wisdom can be more, we might say, of the mind or more conceptual, not so connected initially, even with experience, not so connected with the kind heart. I know when, my own conditioning, as a man, even though I think at root I was a fairly emotional person, but I didn't really know this very well. The only reason ways I knew it was that I would watch Driver Ed movies when I was a teenager and I would sometimes cry. Anyone else have that experience? And I also would, and sometimes at movies would cry, but it was not something that was very familiar. And I was mostly in my thinking mind most of the time because I thought that was what I was supposed to do as a student. And I remember being a graduate student and being actually in Germany and walking to classes and one day thinking, I'm thinking all the time. I'm just like consciousness on a pole, which was really startling to have that experience. And so one extreme is that the wisdom can be separated from our emotions, from the body, from the heart. I don't think that's what the Buddha intended, but it can be like that, or, the way that so much of education is more conceptual, not really connected with our emotions or with the body. And again, I think this has a lot of gender dimensions that often there's gender conditioning, particularly linking males with the cognitive, and this is changing, been changing a lot, but also linking females with more with the emotions. And so I think it's no coincidence. Do you know what percentage of therapists are women? 75%. They can, therapists listen at the heart level, especially. And I also saw something startling a week or two ago. Do you know what percentage of kindergarten teachers are men? You may have seen this. There was an article in the New York Times. 3%. Whoa. So there are those kind of differences. Or I remember reading a book a while ago. Do you remember this book called You Just Don't Understand by Deborah Tannen about gender dimensions of communication? Anyone remember that book? And she reported that in a couple that was made up of a man and a woman, when they did studies, they found that the person who would bring up a challenge in the relationship and say, we need to talk. It would be, I think it was like 80 to 90% of the person bringing up the issue would be the woman. So we have that kind of deep conditioning, and that I know for myself, reconnecting with the heart was for me, metta and loving kindness played a very large role, and relationships played a large role, but it was challenging to be coming more from the cognitive and the wisdom dimension and integrating the heart. So there is for many of us, maybe most of us, strong conditioning. So I mentioned how we can have often, even in Buddhist tradition, a separation between wisdom on the one hand and the heart qualities, the metta, the loving kindness, the compassion on the other. That they can sometimes be separate. How do we bring them together? How do we integrate them? How do we have them more connected? Because I think there's something very powerful about having this quality of what we might call, a loving wisdom. Or Jack Kornfield has the phrase, the wise heart. I think this is really pointing to what we might call the deepest aspiration of being a human being. It's to have a deep love, a deep quality of kindness, and to link that with wisdom. Right? So we avoid the extremes of being really maybe wise, but more conceptual and not connect with the heart on the one hand, or what would the other extreme be, being very loving, but not necessarily wise. What would that look like? That might be more, maybe more self-centered. So it's interesting to look at how they get separated and how they can be brought together. And I think this is something that we find in multiple religious or spiritual traditions. There's a line which I found from the Talmud in the Jewish tradition where it says, the highest form of wisdom is kindness. Right? Very, very beautiful. And I think in Jewish and Christian and Islamic traditions, there's often the sense that the nature of reality, the deepest nature of reality, is that of love. Often in those traditions, to be said to be the nature of God is love, and God is of the nature of reality, right? So that would point to knowing reality clearly is to be integrated with love. One of the 99 names of Allah in the Islamic tradition is the loving one. And Allah is also referred to very often in the Quran as the most compassionate and the most merciful, and being full of loving awareness. And something which we find also, many of in the Sufi tradition. Remember that line from Rumi where it goes something like, you are of the nature of love. Drink it down with heart and soul. So that's the pointer. And, one thing that I've reflected on, maybe you've done that too, in terms of gender. Have you ever thought of how the Buddha, and I think also Jesus, bring together both what we would call masculine and feminine qualities? I think of them as androgynous. How many people have had that thought that some of these figures have both what we would call masculine and feminine qualities? They manifest both wisdom and love, right? And there's a way that there's a different, almost like gender dimension to it. The usual conditioning around the genders is no longer there in the same way. That's been something which has been interesting to me to see. So how do we develop this? In the guided meditation, I pointed to some ways that we could bring together wisdom, and we might say wisdom and love, or wisdom and kindness, in our practice. And I'm going to invite any of you, if you feel inspired, to do this practice, and could talk about it when I come back in 2 weeks. So see if you're inspired that way to really look to the integration of love and wisdom in your lives in different ways, in meditation and in the flow of daily life. So what does it look like? In developing concentration, as I suggested in the guided meditation, we can really tune in with our focus and have a almost like a devotional quality. There's a line that I like very much from Kierkegaard where he says, purity of heart is to will one thing. That's focusing on one thing can have a beautiful quality to it. And in concentration practice, sometimes some of you have done the concentration retreat at Spirit Rock, and sometimes we would say, can you have a sense of almost of love of the breath or a devotional quality? Again, the breath is that which keeps us alive. Can we be doing concentration practice and bring in this quality of the kind heart, of the appreciative heart, of love? Can we, with our mindfulness practice, follow that line from Sylvia, where she says, may I meet this moment fully. May I meet this moment as a friend. I was talking with Sylvia about a week ago. I think it was about a week ago, maybe a little longer. And I was talking about this theme because I was wanting to be developing the talk, which you're hearing tonight. And I talked with her about it, and she said, in her view, if the mind is clear, the heart is open. If the mind is truly clear, the heart is open. I think after we've especially worked through some of our conditioning. And I think in mindfulness, another way that the awakened heart manifests is when we're mindful and something of something and there's some pain or difficulty with the situation, we might notice a very natural compassion arising. How many people sometimes notice compassion naturally arising in your mindfulness when you have something painful occur? That's another way that this integration occurs. And you can invite that. What I would encourage at the beginning of the meditation, really invite both the heart and the wisdom to be there. That would be my suggestion. And again, it can invite that also, even during the day, something difficult happens. Can I bring the mindfulness in with the compassion? We can notice also, maybe with our mindfulness, when something occurs that blocks the heart or that gets in the way of the heart. We can have some wisdom about that, noticing when the heart gets shut down, maybe some equanimity about that, some wisdom. And then in practicing metta, there can also be this kind of integration. Again, a typical way that we practice loving kindness, the way it was brought really by Sharon Salzberg from Burma, is with the repetition of phrases. And at times the phrases can be wordy. And we can be more mental with our metta. How many people have sometimes noticed that with your metta, that it gets more wordy? So how do we move away from that? How do we move away from having the metta be wordy? Sometimes, if you've done the metta retreat or done practice with me, I give the guidance very often when we're saying the phrases, also with each being, to have an image of the being or the felt sense, which brings in the emotions more. We have the sense of the person, and then we can feel the body around the heart. And this tends to move us away from the metta being more wordy. And we can really also remember, maybe read some of the Metta Sutta before we practice metta. The lines where the Buddha says, by not having fixed view, the pure-hearted one having clarity of vision. So there's that linking of clarity and kindness. And there are beautiful stories really about how metta can lead to wisdom. There's a story that I think you may know about the Buddha visiting a group of monks who were called the Anuruddhas. They were several monks who were living with the senior monk being named Anuruddha. And the Buddha asked them, how is it you Anirudhas, are living together on friendly terms and harmonious as milk and water, regarding one another with the eye of affection and metta. And the lead monk, Anirudha, said, "We have developed metta in regard to acts of body, speech, and mind. We have diverse bodies, but we have only one mind and heart." So in a way, the metta practiced with others was leading to insight into not self, one of the fundamental areas of insight, that the metta practice led to the insight into the way that we're not simply an independent self. And Anirudha said, this sense of having only one mind and heart, although we have diverse bodies, has been motivated by metta. We no longer prefer, he said, our own happiness to that of others. And there are ways, again, in the early text, that metta becomes part of a path of awakening, that loving kindness itself is said to be able to lead to insight. And there's particularly in the text, there's the pointing to the way that the radiating metta, which we did the last part of the guided meditation, this radiating metta, which again was the main way that the Buddha taught metta, was as this radiating. And it became really interesting to me to, again, look more deeply at the relation of wisdom and the kind heart, because for the last several years, radiating metta has been almost like my default practice. When I went on retreat for the month of March, my basic hangout practice was radiating metta, and beautiful to do that for many, many hours a day. And it would be when I would just walk down the road at Spirit Rock, the radiating metta would fill up the whole awareness and be there with the trees and the landscape and the turkeys and so forth. And so for me, it was a way that I could see that awareness would be deeply integrated with warmth, with the quality of metta. And in the teachings of the Buddha, it's said that the radiating metta and the radiating forms of compassion and joy and equanimity can actually lead to a temporary liberation of the mind and an insight into not self, going beyond the ordinary sense of self, and that this temporary liberation through the heart qualities can lead to one of the stages, can lead to the first few stages of awakening. This is from the Buddha. If the liberation of the mind and heart by compassion has become boundless, as we were exploring, and well developed, certainly one will attain to the level of non-returning. There's a deep level of awakening, or else that which is higher. And the Buddha went on to say, not only does the joy and happiness experienced with boundless radiation of compassion divest lust and sensual desire of their attraction, but the very nature of compassion undermines the tendency of the mind to react with aversion. The Buddha also taught that this radiating metta, this boundless metta, boundless compassion, could be linked with the factors of awakening. And some of the teachings, one practices metta and then connects it with mindfulness, connects it with inquiry, connects it with energy, connects it with joy and rapture, connects it with tranquility, connects it with concentration, connects it with equanimity. Imbuing the mind with metta, one cultivates the mindfulness awakening factor, one cultivates the other awakening factor. And this leads in this experience, again, the teachings of the Buddha, the radiating forms of metta and compassion lead beyond the ordinary sense of self. And so they give wisdom in that sense. And this is also something which we find in the Mahayana tradition and the Vajrayana tradition, that there, you know, the teaching there is especially that there's a union of the heart qualities with the wisdom into the nature of what's called emptiness, that these are two essentially joined qualities, seeing in the way that oneself is not, nothing is really separate and substantial. And so this is what we, this is what we find. Another one of the teachings that I learned when I studied Tibetan tradition is that as one develops deep awareness, deep, what would be called non-dual awareness, this also leads very naturally as it deepens to a manifestation in compassion of helping others. And so again, we can find different expressions of this union of the connection of wisdom and loving kindness. So I want to finish just with a story and then a quotation. The story came from when I was talking with Sylvia just a little while ago. She was talking about how metta was a very natural quality, and she told a story of how she saw a man who had a young little duckling on his boot, and he was standing in the middle of the road, that there was a mother duck and ducklings who were trying to cross a street near where she lived. And the little duckling wouldn't move, wasn't wanting to go any further, maybe was scared. And the mother duck wouldn't go, and so she was right in the middle of the street. And everyone stopped for the duck and the duckling. And the man took the duck on his boot and started walking, and the mother duck followed him, and they walked slowly across the street while car after car was stopped with the duckling and the duck. And it's interesting because I saw something very similar about a month ago. There was a duck and duckling family that were crossing a road like around the corner from where I live, and they were going very slowly, and cars were backed up for a block or two, all of them just really patiently and with wonder and love watching the duckling. So just the way that natural metta can be there, you know, in the middle of the day. And so I'll finish with a quotation some of you know from the great yogi Nisargadatta, who was the so-called Bidiwala, who just had a shop. And this is what he said about the connection of love and wisdom. I find that somehow, by shifting the focus of attention, I become the very thing I look at and experience the kind of consciousness it has. I become the inner witness of the thing. I call this capacity of entering other focal points of consciousness love. You may give it any name you like. Love says I am everything. Wisdom says I am nothing. Between the two, my life flows. Since at any point of time and space, I can be both the subject and the object of experience, I express it by saying that I am both wisdom and love, and neither, and beyond both wisdom and love. So I hope that last quotation clarified everything. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And let's just sit for a moment and let the talk settle, really pointing to how we might bring together and integrate wisdom and love more fully in our practice and our understanding. So let's sit quietly and then we can have some discussion together. Sit quietly for a minute or two. So let's open things up now. If you'd like to ask something or share something about your own explorations, anything to do with this way that wisdom and love can be separate or wisdom and love can be connected. So please, Isabel, and then Vita, and then Liz.
Yeah, hi Donald.
Hi.
I loved your talk. I love loving kindness, as you know. But I have two questions, or one statement and a question. The question is, how exactly are we integrating? Like, you talked a little bit about it during meditation, but I wasn't sure I was tapping into the wisdom side of the practice. But so my, and my statement also is related to that, just that from years of doing metta loving kindness in the form of, the five people and kind of the statements, and it's very focused and very meditative, but I always feel like even though it's focused on the heart and focused on my caring,
Yeah.
that is a huge amount of wisdom that's lurking, for lack of a better word, deep inside me that is tapped into when I do metta, and that, like, I make decisions in different ways and I react to people in different ways and more wise ways just from doing the practice of the loving kindness without focusing on any wisdom. But I
Well,
see,
without even having that as an intention, that the wisdom can develop. Yeah.
not that I know of, I mean, I'm just doing, like, the myself, a benevolent kind person, a friend, a
Yeah.
stranger, and a difficult person, and I have some very deep, like, prayers for all of us, and as we've talked about, like, I definitely see the impacts in my life that are huge and profound, and sometimes even like cosmic changes in people that I'm around, good fortune that comes into my life, and decision making that's really pointed and good on my behalf, on myself. And I think that it's because loving kindness has a way of kind of guiding my life in a better way, for lack of a good word to say. Anyway, that's my two cents. And then just
Yeah, thank you, Isabel. Yeah, I think that there's a lot there. I think what you're pointing to is that I think is that the metta practice, even the repetition with the phrases, can really open up dimensions of wisdom, that even without emphasizing. I'm emphasizing some more conscious, intentional integration of them. Partly to further the process, because I think the experience you have, I don't think that's quite universal from my own teaching of metta. But I think what you're saying, and it's not so hard to imagine, I bring loving kindness to others and I go beyond maybe my narrow sense of being a separate self. I have more insight into, what's called not self. Remember, the three areas of core wisdom in the teachings are insight into impermanence, insight into dukkha, insight into not self. And the metta can really, much like that story of the Aniruddhas, can take us so we don't have a sense of just being a separate, independent self. So I think that sounds right, that the metta in itself can really potentially open up wisdom in different ways. And I think in a parallel way, the wisdom practices can potentially open up the heart qualities. I mentioned, we can look, we could potentially look into impermanence, into dukkha, reactivity, the way our mind gets on fire. And that could potentially open us up to compassion, right? I don't think it necessarily always does, but it can, right? That the cultivate the core ways that we cultivate wisdom, through mindfulness can also open us up to compassion. So I think both can happen, but I think some intentionality can be helpful in large part because of the conditioning of our culture, to have them be separate. And, again, maybe it's a little bit more, that conditioning is a little more intense with, maybe it's more intense with men. Maybe I'm partly coming out of my own personal grappling with these issues. So, but thank you. Yeah. Vita, please.
Okay, I'll try to make this quick. So when I'm working with clients, I have wisdom and I have metta written all over to remind me. But somehow talking about compassion feels different than metta. So I'm not quite sure what that is. It's like I wrote down to remember, particularly with challenging clients, compassion. Somehow it's different than loving kind, and I guess that's the question. I guess that's the question. Somehow I'm feeling a diff, and there's a real difference between metta, loving kindness and compassion. So I guess it's so I'm explaining an experience that I'm feeling and also a question, and I hope you can make sense of that, Donald.
Thanks, Vita. Yeah, they're different experiences, although there may be more of a spectrum where one kind of merges into the other. It's often said that the there's one awakened heart, and it has four different flavors. That when it's just sort of meeting the world and wishing well, the heart of goodwill, the mind and heart of goodwill, that's metta. And the root of metta is the word friend for friendliness, right? And so that can be our, that may be our way that we experience metta. But then when we the teaching is that when that awakened heart of metta meets something difficult or painful in oneself or another, it becomes compassion, has a different flavor. If there, it involves some opening to pain, right? And it would be very natural, like when we have compassion, also to bring in the teachings about dukkha and reactivity, another way that the integration can occur, because we can have compassion for pain. And our wisdom would say that when we have pain, and if you remember that teaching, we shoot the second arrow, the pain is amplified, right? That when I have a difficult experience and then I blame myself for it, that is, I can have compassion and see the reactivity or the dukkha there.
Of course, I'm talking about more compassion for another rather than. That's very, very
But the
helpful.
compassion in general is going to be is going to be the kind heart meeting something difficult or painful.
Yeah, thank you so much. Really, really, really helpful.
So they're actually different qualities, and then the awakened heart meets something beautiful and turns into joy. That's often how the teaching is. So there's just one heart, but depending on what happens, it takes different forms. Liz, please.
Hi. A few years, about 20 years ago, a teacher whose name I won't mention told me that she asked me if I could engender a feeling in my body and my heart when I was doing metta, and that she could not, which was fairly shocking. I'm sure that's changed in 20 years, but you can say words and not have the body and heart feeling. And I just found this quote supposedly from the Dalai Lama. As you breathe in, cherish yourself. As you breathe out, cherish all beings. So it's kind of a shorthand for metta. And also, Jack mentioned a while back that when hospital workers, or you could take this into many situations, before they go into a patient's room, say, "I am loving awareness," to remind themselves. But I think the felt sense in the body for me is extremely important, maybe more than the words.
That's because again, in the form of radiating metta or radiating compassion, as I was giving the guidance, it really starts with a felt sense of the body around the heart, and then letting that radiate out, And that can take some time to develop, but it's really the felt sense of the body then extending out in space, which leads to that quality of the very expansive form of metta, not using the phrases. That expansive form of metta is presumably how the Buddha taught metta. And I also love you quoting the Dalai Lama because it's like, that also could be a way of almost like having attention to the breath be linked with metta.
Yes.
Which again, I'm pointing to ways we can in our practice experientially bring these together so they get more and more connected. Again, in part because we all, I think, including myself, have residues from our conditioning to separate this. It's just as part of the conditioning in Western culture to have mind and emotions and body separate.
Thank you. I can put that in the chat. And in the course I took on compassion, it said that when you're working with someone who is in pain and you need to have compassion, you need to think about yourself also. So you breathe in compassion for yourself, and then you breathe out compassion for the other.
Yeah, that's a form that's also there in the Tibetan tradition of Tonglen. Very similar. Yeah. Maybe last one, Deborah.
I came late and I missed most of the meditation, and I apologize for that. And I'm getting more and more confused because I have so many thoughts running around in my head right now. I have so many questions. I don't see how you could be wise without being kind, compassionate, or loving. I don't see how. I'm probably showing my ignorance of Dharma after all these decades, but I know I have an aspiration, be the light you want to see. And you mentioned the word intentionality, and that was the first time the word intention came up, I think, in this talk. Thank you for the recap, by the way, of your January talk, and thank you for all of this talk. And you've given me a lot to think of, but I'm just feeling confused, I guess, because, and I get the patriarchy thing and men, and there's wrathful gods in Judaism and Islam and in Christianity, when the core teachings are nothing like that, as you were saying earlier. If I have an aspiration to bring a certain energy through my being, through my physical being, into my activities, my daily life, my thoughts, for myself and others. If I have that aspiration, I have to be kind to the best of my ability
Yeah.
as many times a day, whether it's helping a friend last night who lost her cat or somebody else's. I mean, it just comes up a million times a day where I have an opportunity to be supportive in a loving and compassionate way. And I just think that's a smart thing to do. Is that wisdom?
Yeah, I think what you're pointing to is that to be really our practice is pointing to both together. Like it said, the Dharma or the teachings is like a bird with two wings, wisdom and compassion, right? And so the maturity of our practice, is to bring together wisdom and whatever we call it, love, kindness, and so forth. And, the motivation for my talk was that even though this might be the aspiration, I can see ways that they're not fully connected. And I can see the importance of really having a very clear intention to bring them together and to have that really be there, even in the, particular ways that we practice concentration or mindfulness and so forth, mindfulness or metta. And that's what I wasn't really encouraging. And that we have the recording for the guided meditation, so you can hear
Thank you.
that later.
I'm just thinking, it was the Dalai Lama's 86th birthday. I think it was on Tuesday, one day this week. And I just remember one of the very first things I heard about him 1,000 years ago was him saying, "My true religion is kindness."
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And he, again, I would love to say my true religion is, I would like to somehow get the wisdom in there too.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
Thank you.
you. And Nancy, I think we're getting up towards the closing time.
I'll lower my hand.
Okay.
I can, yeah. Deborah triggered something. Well, can I take 1 minute? Is there
Try
time?
to take 30 seconds. Yeah.
Okay, 30 seconds. As Deborah was talking, I realized I'm one of those 75% of the therapists. I'm just naturally kind of wired and always have been to be compassionate
Yes.
and to listen to people. But wisdom is a little harder for me to come by.
Yeah.
So that second wing, I have to weave mindfulness into it in order to act wisely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Nancy. Yeah, so that's great to see that. And so you can, I would say, emphasize two things. Keep cultivating the wisdom, and then keep focusing on the integration with the kindness, which is already very well developed. Yeah. And let's finish. I'll turn it over to the metta in just a moment, but let's take about a minute and let me invite people to see if you feel called to have an intention in the next period of time, and especially if you feel called in the next 2 weeks. So I'll be back in 2 weeks to have this emphasis yourself. You can have it in the ways that I explored in the guided meditation with developing concentration or the mindfulness or the metta with phrases or the radiating metta. How would you like to keep going what we might have opened up with today's session? Take a minute just to set your own personal intention.